Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge, and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed. I'm joined once again by my girlfriend, Juliana. Say hello.
Hello.
Last time out we were doing, what was it, Cloud Atlas last time out, I think it was, and Saga before then. I have actually read some books by myself this time out. I've got one by Alistair Reynolds called On the Steel Breeze that I finished ages ago. I still haven't got around to recording a podcast of it through no reason at all. It's just that it wasn't kind of A-grade Alistair Reynolds, so I wasn't like, you know, bursting to talk about it. And now it's been like 3 weeks since I finished it. Maybe I'll get around to it tomorrow. And we've another book that I also finished today, and you're near the end as well, with Use of Weapons by Ian and Banks, continuing on with our culture series read along. Are you going to quickly check your iPad there to see where you're up to? And also this is the first podcast that we're recording here in 2014. We thought we'd just have a quick like look back over some science fictiony kind of stuff that we've done here in 2013 and do a quick review. Where are you up to then in there? So you're in part 3,
626 of
700 blah blah blah. Yeah, so you've got a quarter of the book to go there.
Yeah.
So you'll finish that up in the next few days, I'm sure.
Yes,
I finished up a bit more quickly because I was reading it as an ebook. But also I managed to get an audiobook download of Use of Weapons. Anyway, so before we get onto The Martian, which is what this episode is going to be about, do you want to talk about your favorite books? Any favorite books or science fiction books in 2013? I mean, I don't really have a whole lot to share. What I really wanted to do is talk about some science fiction movies that we'd seen, because we do watch quite a bit of movies.
Yeah.
So here's my list of science. I was thinking, well, maybe I didn't watch that many science fiction movies, but I made a blog post the other day where I went back through, because I keep track on a forum that I chat in of like every time I watch a movie, I just mention the movie there. And so it makes it easy just to go back through. So my science fiction movies that I've seen this year include Green Lantern, Prometheus, District 9, Armageddon, Seeking Your Friend for the End of the World, which kind of, there's an asteroid going to hit the Earth. We watched Armageddon in German at your parents' place, and then we watched Seeking Your Friend for the End of the World, like the next night or something that. It was a very weird double bill. We watched Star Trek 2, Wrath of Khan, Star Trek 2009, Star Trek Into Darkness. We watched them as a group, a little marathon, didn't we? Leading up to when Star Trek Into Darkness comes out. I watched 2001 twice this year. You watched it once.
Yes.
I watched it once on the back on an airplane, and on the screens, and it was a pan and scan version of 2001: A Space Odyssey. Much much better in proper aspect ratio on a bigger screen. We watched Robot and Frank. I can't remember if we talked about that. Robot and Frank.
It's really nice. I really enjoyed that one.
And it reminded me a lot of a Verna Vinge novel called Rainbow's End. I'm not sure if I mentioned that at the time.
No.
John Carter of Mars, which was actually not as shit as we were led to believe it was going to be. It was, in the end, an okay movie.
Just not great.
Yeah, it's just... Yes, I can understand why people thought it would be a flop, but it wasn't. It wasn't as bad as everyone. Sunshine, Danny Boyle film, his science fiction movie, going into the sun. Not very good science fiction, but I think a very, very good movie. Independence Day. Why wouldn't we watch Independence Day? That's another movie that I watched half of it on a flight, and then we were landing, so we switched it off. And then when I got back, I was like, let's watch Independence Day.
I can watch it all over and over again. It's just so, like, basic and good every time I watch it.
I remember I did actually release an SFBRP episode about that, because I chatted to Jesse about it.
Yeah, we talked about it too, I think.
Apollo 13, which will probably come up again in this thing, which is a good movie. That was our first... No, it wasn't actually. I was going to say that was our first Blu-ray that we watched. I'm totally lying. We got a Blu-ray this year and a new television. Juliana's parents got a new television, so we got their old television, which was a lot bigger than our current television. We watched Oblivion, which, again, I was led to believe wasn't a good movie. In fact, it's actually a really good movie. It's totally generic, totally derivative.
Yeah, it's very Tom Cruise-like, but I really enjoyed it. And it had some really cool features in it and some really unexpected... For me, unexpected twists.
For me, it wasn't unexpected. However, it was one of those movies that you start off and you think, oh, this has got so many plot holes. But as the twists came along, the twists fixed more and more of the plot holes. But it was still another, like in so many of these movies, the end of it was sort of like, okay, blow up the base of the enemy, and then all of their minions stop working. And you're just like, oh, come on, do we have to have that ending of... you know, it's like the Phantom Menace did that, you know, sort of like, and then all the robots, yeah. like this, and you've seen it over and over. Independence Day has a variation of that, but it's...
Yeah, that's, it's more fun.
It was more fun. Then we watched Terminator and Terminator 2. We're still going to watch Terminator 3 and 4. You're not that interested.
Terminator 3 is a really funny
movie. It's not a good Terminator movie, but it's like a comedy based on the first two Terminator movies.
Arnold Schwarzenegger again.
And then we've got, I watched Dread, you didn't watch Dread, Judge Dread, which is way, 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 way better than the Sly Stallone Dread. The guy, who's, I can't remember who Dread is, it's the guy Bones in Star Trek, in the latest Star Trek, I can't remember the guy's name, played that. Then we watched Source Code, which is a weird time-travel-y loopy thing. Did you enjoy Source Code?
Was like just a good basic...
Yeah,
I can't really remember.
So time travel. He keeps going back, getting sent back onto a train and stuff. Yeah, it's fun enough.
It was okay.
I'd seen it before. That was your first time watching it. Then we watched Gravity, which might also come up in this podcast review.
We watched it in 3D, which was really good to watch a movie that's just entirely in space in 3D. It was really good.
The thing that annoys me most about 3D is that the focus, like, it's difficult to know what to focus on when, you know, when the scene changes from, like, one shot to the next shot, you're having to readjust your focus and going, okay, there was something at this depth and now there's something in a different depth. However, what made Gravity work so well for me in 3D, and among lots of other things, what made it work so well for me in 3D was that the shots were like 10 minutes long. So every time that you went to something else, the camera would swoop around to point at it. It wouldn't just be a cut from one thing to the next. It would be like in real time, so your eyes could adjust in real time. And also, because things in the middle of the screen, like the things you were looking at, normally in the middle of the screen, and they were surrounded by blackness.
Yeah.
So the thing that was floating wasn't being cut off at the edges. It was often just in the middle of the screen, which I really liked. Anyway, I have lots of good stuff to say about Gravity, even though I think I mentioned on an SFF audio podcast, I didn't think it was science fiction. Because it's just a disaster movie that happens to be set in space.
Yeah.
And it just happens to be set on spaceships that don't exist. But I'd like to think that all of those spaceships could exist. But it's one of those weird things that you get into. It's like, oh, is it science fiction? It's set in space. If it's got time travel, it's set in space.
And it is fiction.
It's science fiction-y enough. I watched Man of Steel, which I don't normally include. I would not normally include like superhero movies and things like that as science fiction, but Green Lantern is about aliens coming from space and blowing stuff up, and that's science fiction enough. Man of Steel was actually had more science fiction in than a lot of science fiction movies that I saw, even though it was a pretty bad movie. Cloud Atlas, we talked about last time out, and also we watched Jurassic Park, which is, I think, is very good science fiction and still one of my all-time favorite movies.
Watch all over again.
Yeah, I had Fifth Element, which we watched early on in the year.
Yeah, that's my all-time favorite science fiction movie. Yeah. I just love it.
It's
so green!
And 2001, we watched that again. That's why it's on the list. And then Elysium. That was our last movie of 2013. Elysium with Matt Damon and Jodie Foster and who else? Who was the... And the guy... It's directed by Neil Blomkamp. Hmm. Blomkamp? Who directed District 9, and that's where we're like, hey, let's give this a go. And I'd heard it wasn't very good. And like for the first two-thirds, or like for the first half of it, we're like, hey, this is really good. And then the last half of the movie came up and we're like, oh yeah, now I understand why people don't like it. So anyway, I thought it might just be interesting to run down some of our favourites. So your favourite science fiction movie of this year?
The Fifth Element.
No, that you saw for the first time.
I think one of the best ones was District 9, which was surprising.
That was the first time you've seen it.
For me, really surprising to see something in this way, to have aliens on the Earth and being like in the ghettos. Things.
Yeah, normally aliens come to Earth and they're powerful.
They ghetto the humans.
Yeah.
And so this is why I really enjoyed it. It was really, I mean, it had some really cruel scenes in it and stuff, but it was good. And go back to the list.
Oh, okay.
I also quite enjoyed Star Trek Into Darkness.
Yeah. And it was better than the Star Trek 2009.
Yeah. And as I said, Oblivion was good. Gravity was good too.
Yeah, the thing
it's like you had several like of these typical science fiction movies coming out now. They're kind of average, you know. They're okay. You have fun and stuff. but none of these will be like outstanding. Like,
yeah, like it's going to be in 10 years' time.
Fifth Element, I could watch over and over. It's just really good. It doesn't matter which time it is, even if the in Fifth Element, the costumes were made by Gautier. But it's just good. It's just timeless.
But you know, like, in 10 years' time, we're going to be going back. We're going to be going, like, Oblivion. Yeah, that was the one. Who was in that one? Was that the one that was with Will Smith? Or was that the one with Tom Cruise? And they're like, yeah, it was Tom Cruise. And that was the one where he was with the people, and they could see into the future, and they could see his own, you know, they could see them if he was a murderer or
that's
not.
That's Minority Report. Yeah, no, they,
exactly. This is the conversation people are going to have about Oblivion in 10 years' time.
Yeah, sure.
But even in 20 years' time, people are going to go Jurassic Park, and everyone's going to go, yeah, when I was 13. I was 13, that was my favourite movie. Yeah, so I don't actually, of all the movies that I've seen this year, like for the first time this year, none of them come close to like 10 of the other movies. You know, like District 9, it was the first time you saw it. But like, you know, I've seen that before. Like, of all the new movies that came out, I'd say 2001, Fifth Element, Jurassic Park, Independence Day, Terminator and Terminator 2, Apollo 13, Sunshine, and Wrath of Khan. Like, all of them are better than all movies except maybe Gravity.
Yeah. But
no, Gravity would...
Gravity is totally different.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Gravity would be up there. I think Gravity will be, like, in 10 years' time, people will be going, remember Gravity? And they'll be like, yeah, movies have never been the same since. And you'll be like, yep. Anyway, so there is our little discussion about some movies that we've seen here. There's a nice 10 little discussion to start off. Shall we get on to our book that we're going to review now?
Yeah, okay. Did you ask at the beginning also about the...
Oh, books.
Books.
Yeah, well, maybe we can do that in the next podcast.
Okay, let's put that in the next.
Because we can do our top 5 books of 2013.
That's good.
We'll do that next.
Before the use of weapons.
Yeah, we'll do the use before use of weapons, or another podcast that we do. Because I haven't looked through that list, but I had this movie list already there.
Right.
So let's get on to it. So The Martian by Andy Weir. I got an email from somebody, and this is a good lesson to everyone who wants me to read one of their books, or not one of their books. If you have a book that you want to suggest to me, the best thing to do is email it to me. Email me about it, or send me a... if you just send me a recommendation, I actually get loads and loads of recommendations by the automatic recommendation thing on goodreads.com. So if you don't explain a reason, but someone said, hey, I work in a bookshop... I should have actually looked up this email. I work in a bookshop in America, and we have some more advanced reader copies of The Martian by Andy Weir, which is coming out next year, because it was like in... You know, he says it's coming out in February. And I'll send you a copy. Sure, I'll have to pay for postage, but I think you'd really enjoy this book. Let me send it to you. And I was like, no, I don't think I replied back to that email immediately. But I was thinking, okay, someone is willing to send, like, pay postage to send me this book. So he obviously read it and thinks I might enjoy it. And then Juliana and I, for New Year's, we were going over to the Netherlands, from Berlin to the Netherlands. It's like a 6-hour drive each way, roughly. And that's for New Year, so we had like 6 hours there, 6 hours back, and we're like, oh, let's find ourselves an audiobook to listen to that we can finish off in that time span. And so we were looking through, you were looking through Audible, weren't you?
I was checking out Audible and trying to find a nice English-speaking science fiction book that we could read. And I went across this one, I thought The Martian, well, the title... doesn't really...
But how did you see it there? I mean, or was it just in a list or
no,
something?
No, I went into the audiobook and then English, and then because I'm in the German Audible...
Oh, so there's not a huge amount of them there?
Yeah, they are, but you have to find them.
Okay.
So that I went to the English and then science fiction.
But why did this one stick out for you?
I don't know. It was that the title was funny, and I thought I'd check it out also because of the cover. You have a bit of a red planet on top. And then I thought, I just read it. I mean, it happens a lot of times that I just go there and check out books. And I don't know what appeals to me by just reading titles. But I read the
description.
Description about it, and it seemed
Here's the publisher's summary. I'm pretty much fucked. That's my considered opinion. Fucked.
Yeah, and
you're like,
by reading
that's
it sounds quite... I thought, well... Why not? It sounds sounds fun.
So, and because there's when you mentioned that to me, and I'd be like, oh yeah, someone already emailed me about that one, and it's 10 hours, 28 minutes, which is almost exactly the time that we needed to fill.
Perfect.
So, apparently, just a bit of publishing history, this was published, self-published by Andy Weir last year, like last spring or something, wasn't it? And he published it on Amazon, and it was doing well, and they obviously did this, got someone to do this narration. This is published by Podium Publishing in 2013. When was it released? Yes, yeah, so this was released back in this audiobook was released back in March last year, so 2013. But then the book has been picked up. It says here by Crown. What's that? Random House. Anyway, something like that.
Yeah, it's Random House.
So Random House is now in control of publishing it. So there,
which by the way is owned by Bertelsmann, which is a German company.
Every publishing company has like four or five levels. You have the imprints, which is owned by this, which is owned by that holding company, which is owned by this one of the big ones, like BMG or whoever owns it. And
no, not BMG, Bertelsmann.
Bertelsmann is a different one. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's coming out again. So, but since it's been picked up by a proper publisher, apparently they've gone through and done more copy editing or more editing or anything like this, and the audiobook version that we listen to, narrated by R.C. Bray, is the previous self-published, not professionally, oh maybe it had been professionally copy edited or had some editing, but yeah. it's since then it has changed. So if you get the Random House version, which isn't out yet, so it's out in February, you'll get a slightly different version. So just to clear it all up, that's why I'm going into the publication history, is we're talking about the previous version, and we have no idea how much the later version
has changed.
Yeah. The Random House or whatever it is version has changed. So, publisher summary. I'm pretty much fucked. That's my considered opinion. Fucked. 6 days into what should have been the greatest 2 months of my life. It's turned into a nightmare. I don't even know who'll read this. I guess someone will find it eventually. Maybe 100 years from now. For the record, I didn't die on Sol 6. Certainly the rest of my crew thought I did, but I can't blame them. Maybe there'll be a day of national mourning for me, and my Wikipedia page will say, Mark Watney is the only human being to have died on Mars. And it'll be right, probably, because I'll surely die here. Just not on Sol 6, when everyone thinks I did. Let's see, where do I begin? ... And that's how the book starts as well. Yeah. That's like the opening of the book, and you're like this is the thing, you read that, and you're like, oh, really, what's this? So, to wrap it up, really easily, it starts off that way. A crew is on Mars and they take off without him. And I don't need to give away why they leave Mark Watney behind, but five people leave on the Mars ascent vehicle and go back into orbit and set off home. And by a weird kind of Rube Goldberg-y kind of thing, they can't find him, can't get into radio contact to him, think he's dead, and he can't get back in contact with them because there's a windstorm and, you know, a sandstorm and all that kind of stuff going on. So you get what is most easily described as Robinson Crusoe on Mars. Not to be confused with the movie from the 1960s called Robinson Crusoe on Mars, which we just watched the trailer for, which looks really, really funny.
Yeah.
It goes, the trailer for Robinson Crusoe on Mars is like, this is as though it is, this is tomorrow's, no, it's today's science. This could be happening tomorrow. This is exactly scientifically accurate. And then it's all like, fire on Mars and molten lava.
And you see the astronauts on Mars taking their helmets off and walking around.
And there's monkeys going on, and there's fire and water, and then aliens come down and like,
and water.
So it's like a parody of science. It's like a science fiction parody, Robinson Crusoe parody kind of thing.
I must put it ahead. The Martian is pretty much the opposite of what we just described.
Yes, yeah, that's what I was saying. I don't, like, Robinson Crusoe on Mars is the movie. And you may think, wow, why should we know about this? But I just looked up on Wikipedia. It's been released on the as a Criterion Collection movie. It's a cult movie, so... Because we mentioned this at the bookshop when we were around there on Friday, weren't we? We talked to Kim. And we say, oh, yeah, we're listening to the audiobook The Martian, and it's like Robinson Crusoe on Mars. And he's like, oh, like the movie. You know, so, but he's a movie buff. He watches lots of all these kind of stuff. So that's the setup. He is on Mars. People are heading away from Mars, and he's there, and he needs water, and he needs air, and he needs food, and he needs shelter. And it's actually, it's not the first mission to Mars. This is actually the third mission to Mars. And it's like NASA has planned five missions to Mars, and he's in the middle mission to Mars. And he was the lowly engineer and botanist. And then has to live there.
And
that's the story.
And we get to hear his view quite a long time into the book because he's writing into his log.
Yeah.
How do you call it? Logbook?
Yeah, it's logbook. It's like yeah. logbook. Stardate, this...
Yeah.
And it, oh, Stardate is Sol.
In Sol. So he starts from Sol 6 because that's... The mission of them started at Sol 1, but then because they had to leave...
on Sol 6, yeah.
It starts on
They
Sol
were meant
6.
To be there for 50 sols. Now, you were asking, what's a sol? And I explained to you that a sol... You can't call it a day on... Mars, because a day is a 24-hour unit of time, and a one Martian day is like 24 hours and 38 minutes. Actually, I can't remember how much it is, but there's an extra like 30, 40 minutes at the end of every Martian 24 hours to bring it up to speed. So you can't call that a day, because if you do, then the days get mixed up, and that's actually what they do when we start hearing things a bit later on from Earth's point of view.
Yeah.
They're always like, well, what time is it now on Mars? You know, and it's like, oh, well, at the moment we're, you know, it's 2 in the afternoon here, but it's 6 in the morning there, and then later on it's, well, it's 2 in the afternoon here, but now it's 8 in the morning, you know, and they got this... Because it's going off by 45 minutes. I once read this really cool thing where there were the guys who were, the NASA scientists who were JPL who were controlling the Mars rovers, they work on Mars time. So sometimes they're on night shift and sometimes they're in day shift.
And you get this in this book too.
Yeah, yeah. But what they said, hey, what we should do is we should put the Mars control on a cruise ship which is sailing around the world, and as long as it keeps heading west or east, no, which way would it go? Anyway, as long as we keep going, we can make up the 45 minutes a day or 40 minutes a day that we'd need to, as long as we just keep going round and round and round, just keep heading west or east, actually, I can't work out what it would be. We could do that, and we could actually stay where noon on the cruise ship would always be matching up with noon on the... Of course, it was a silly proposal, but I thought that was actually quite fun just to be on a ship which constantly goes in. So yes, Mars time is measured in sols, Earth is measured in
days,
and hours and minutes. So what else do we want to say about the setup? Really, I mean, it's like I say, it's a journal for a lot of it. Like I guess the first third of it,
more, because in total it comes back and forth. So
Mark Watney is up there completely cut off from everyone. And he is going, well, I need to do this, I need to do that. And then we suddenly switch to Earth, and there's someone like, it's the mission director, isn't it? Venkat.
Yeah.
Venkat. And he is like, well, let's take a picture of the place where, you know, of this old base. And they're like, oh, we can't take a picture there because we'll see his dead body that he was laying outside. And they're like, oh, just take a picture anyway because all of the supplies are still there.
Reuse the supplies, and we need to see how much we can still use after the storm there.
Mm.
And then, of course, which wasn't even in my head so much, but obviously the NASA is public domain. So everything that they see, then take photos of, is getting published, and people can see it. And there will be people who are, like, people sit in front of their computers checking out Mars photographs whenever
people
they come
around. They do see these.
And then they would see his dead body, and they would go viral on the internet. We know about these kinds of things.
Yeah, but I thought, actually, when the book started, I was like, well, like, why aren't they taking photos? Like, how... Because he's there for, like, days, and, like, it's, like, 40 days or 40 sols or something before they take photos. And all that time when we were listening to the book, I was thinking, well, surely they would have taken photos because that's what they do. Like, every time that there's a Mars lander, like, a probe lands, you always see... Like, they always, like, when the Opportunity and Spirit and stuff, or what the, like, Pathfinder, or, no, not Pathfinder, what's the other one? The Phoenix lander and these other ones. When they land, they actually get the other Mars, like, the European Space Agency Mars. But they take photos of each other's, and there was one where one of them was landing, and they took a photo with one of them was going landing, and they said it was like taking a photo from a speeding bullet at another speeding bullet.
But the person that was in charge, he said it. It is about how do you call that when somebody's dead and you don't want to.
Yeah, but respect for the dead.
Yes, respect for him and his family, of course, too.
Yeah.
And so he didn't want people to stare at his dead body.
But I thought that was one of the things that I thought was that. Let me put it this way. The story might seem a bit weird. Like, you're going, well, what is there to do? The book is like a logic puzzle. The book is like you were playing this computer game just before New Year's
Machinarium.
As well. Yeah, it's just this little robot that goes around and have to solve problems. And it doesn't matter where you go. You always have to solve the same amount of problems in the same order. But they come in steps. So, like, it's like one of them is like, okay, rearrange these things to do this. What do you need to hit with this and do that? And this book because we were listening to it together on a trip over to the Netherlands, it was like, that's what it felt like. It felt like every time it's like, I have a problem, I need water. And we were both like, okay, where does he get the water? Yeah. And like, we were both talking, we would often just pause it.
And then has to go out and then come in with just something different. And then he has to get, somebody on Goodreads said, Andy Weir should change the title towards more like MacGyver on Mars.
Yeah.
Because it feels a bit like, but it is very, it's very intelligent. It's very clever.
The good thing is it lets you, like every time he gets to a problem, he explains the problem in one log entry and it's like, blah, blah, blah. Well, I've somehow got to find a way to do this. And all I have is this, this and this. How am I going to do this? And then he talks about some other things and there's a pause, but that lets us go, okay, well, how can I do this? Well, and he's always like, and now I'll think of it. Now I'll think about this in my head for a while. Yeah. And I'll get back to you, dear diary, in a few days' time. And in that time, it lets us come up with our solutions. And often, like I'd say about half of the time, one of us would come up with a solution, which he comes up with himself, and then it doesn't work out or something like that. There was this one time where he's like, there was obvious that he had to get in contact with Earth again. And because all of the Earth communications were on the ship that flew up out of the way, he couldn't get into contact with Earth, and there was
and they couldn't get in contact
and also
with
the
him.
thing that blew him away, he got hit by an antenna that got blown off the roof of the Mars module or something on the habitation module. So the thing that injured him and blew him away in the first place was the thing that he needed to get back in contact. You know, and there was like quadruple redundancy, and none of them survived. And right at the very beginning, he mentioned these weather stations that had been landed. And I was like, those weather stations must have radios on to communicate with this. And I was all like, he's going to go off and get a radio from one of these weather stations. And I was like, that's my solution. That's how he's going to get a radio. And he doesn't. I don't want to spoil where he does get a radio from, but it's way cooler than that.
Yeah, it is.
And that whole part of the story where he goes to get the radio is actually like a really good thing, because we don't know what's going on, and the people back on Earth by that time are watching him via photos feeds, and they have to decide what he's doing.
A photo every 20 minutes or something, or only certain
times. And they're tracking tracking his movements across Mars,
and it's really good fun to see like the people on Earth who see him can kind of construct what he's doing, can't communicate with him at all. And this whole one-way situation is just sometimes so funny.
Yeah.
And there are several points in the book where you have to laugh out loud.
Yeah.
Because it is just...
What do you mean? There's loads of points. We were laughing all the time with this book.
That's what I'm saying. Also,
Let me just do a bit more bits about this technology and the puzzle solving.
Yeah.
Because what makes this book such a joy to read and listen to, and of course we listen to all of this with the two of us, so we could always discuss it, and I think a lot of our enjoyment of this book comes from that. But there is this other point where the communication between the characters makes the book more interesting, where it's the whole, like, there's these people back on Earth who are watching him do this, and then there's the other astronauts in space who don't, they have less information because they're not told that he's still alive, because they're trying to, protect their stuff. And then he doesn't know what the people on Earth are thinking, they don't know what he's thinking, no communication. And then at some point, like I say, he does manage to get a radio working, and they're back in contact again, but now it becomes the Apollo 13 thing, where there's the people down on Earth who are doing all the hard brain work.
Building something.
Apollo 13 is actually mentioned a few times. He's sort of like, thank goodness all CO2 canisters the CO2 filters have got the same size now. And it's like, we watched Apollo 13 again this year. But for me, it kind of spoilt some of the joy of that, where it always had to come down to this one guy, this one Robinson Crusoe called, what was his name?
Mark Watney.
Mark Watney. When he was finding solutions to them by himself and having to pull through, and he didn't have like the people tracking his course when he needed to travel and all that kind of stuff. I much more enjoyed that. So after about, you know, the that middle section of the book, there's like, you know, like it was like a 10-hour audiobook. There was like an hour and a half in the middle, or maybe 2 hours maybe not even that much in the middle, where he was in communication with Earth. But pretty much he stayed in communication with Earth for about as long as them to say, hey, we've got a plan to get you off Mars. Yeah. And the plan is... and they kind of say it. And then he manages they lose radio communications again and then don't have it again for the rest of the book.
Yeah.
Or for another big section of the book. And I'm like, yes, he's lost communication. And that thing that I really liked at the beginning where they were working, he was having to work independently. He had a goal now. It wasn't just survive as long as possible until I get a radio signal or survive as long as possible until, you know, they can get me back.
Also, he knew in advance because he was on Mars Mission 3 and he knew that there was a Mars
Mission 4.
The only thing that was about the Mars Mission 4 was that, of course, they want to discover the whole planet, so they don't land every mission on the same place. Point.
Yeah.
So he knew that...
It's thousands of kilometers away. Yeah,
there would be another Mars mission. He actually exactly knew when it would be, and he also knew exactly where it would be.
Yeah.
So he had these two factors where he could work with,
yeah.
And so he knew that he had to survive... so long, yeah. Whatever.
So what it comes down to in the end was that all he needed was an updated time and location for where he needed to be by the end of the book, and then they lose communication. It's like, and now the rest of the book is you getting to that place again in your own steam, with your own energy, with your own food, and along the way, of course, loads of stuff goes wrong. Of course, when he's stuck there, he has enough emergency rations for 6 people for 100 days. No, it was like for 6 people for 50 days. Was there, yeah. 40 days left in the mission, plus some spares, plus some emergency rations. Yeah. So and then he had to grow his own food. Thankfully, he was the botanist and he was the engineer, the technician guy. Yeah. And in a way, it was very, very handy because he could use his botany skills to grow some more food for himself because that was one of his... main jobs on Mars was to test out the soil to see what he could grow in the soil. So that was one of his jobs. And because he was one of the main technicians and engineers, he was also very good at fixing stuff and rigging stuff together.
Yeah.
And so he, of anybody who could have been stuck on Mars, was the guy who was trained to survive, which was pretty handy, but that's kind of what you need for a story like this.
Of course.
Which is a bit like an Apollo 13 kind of... Well, what it made me think of most is like Shackleton's journey to the South Pole. He didn't ever reach the South Pole, but his main mission was to walk all the way across Antarctica via the South Pole, starting at one end, get all the way across to the other, and get picked up by a different ship on the other side, but his ship got stuck in ice. And it kind of makes for an even more... interesting story, and I really suggest anyone, there's been hundreds and hundreds of books written about Shackleton, so you could just read the Wikipedia page, nobody died, the ship got broken up, they tramped, you know, 1,000 kilometers across the ice was breaking up, they got into boats, sailed across this place, and then when they got there, again, it was that thing that in Antarctica, in 1914 or whenever this was, there was no radios, there was no way to get in contact, and they're like, okay, we're at safety now, we're not floating on the ice over Antarctic winter anymore, what do we need to do? Ah, we now need to sail this lifeboat with a self-made sail, we've got to sail it across the Southern Ocean, which is like just the worst ocean, I've sailed there,
no.
It's just like the worst ocean, in Antarctica, the single most inhospitable place, and then they arrive on Elephant Island, and then they're like, ah, we're on the wrong side of the island, and then they have to climb out, like, they have to go over the top of this island. And when you read this story, you know, I've listened to lectures about it, I've read books about it, it's just amazing. And you think, well, how did these guys survive that long? And the reason they survived that long is they were picked as, I mean, Shackleton was one of the, you know, he'd been training his entire life to do exactly that. Well, not exactly that mission, but... all those contingencies, all of the navigation that he needed to navigate across Antarctic waters in a small life raft with 4 other guys, and then when he got to the other side, that was his mentality. He was the kind of person who was going to walk across Antarctica. I've been to Antarctica. I went when I was there. I was on a cruise ship, and Peter Hillary, son of Sir Edmund Hillary, was there. This is like Edmund Hillary, first guy to the top of Everest, you know. And talking to this guy, you realize, holy shit, he's got a totally different brain than me. The way that he was talking about walking across Antarctica and about going to the top of Everest and going up K2, and he came off of K2 with his party, and he left behind 7 other people, and they all died. And when you talk to someone like this and listen to a lecture about this kind of person, it wasn't his fault they died, but he was like, I'm not going any further. I'm turning back because this is too dangerous. And other people turned back and didn't make it. He was the last person to turn back and make it down live, you know. And you see these people and you go, now I get it. Like, if you were NASA and you were sending people to Mars, like, these are the kind... Shackleton is the guy who you're going to send to Mars. Like, Robinson Crusoe, like... Mark Watney. I keep thinking, because it's, is it Martin Weir? No, was it? Yeah, Martin.
Andy Weir.
Mark Watney. These are the people who you would send to Mars, because these are the best of the best. Anyway, Juliana's putting a hand up. You want to talk more? I just wanted to talk a bit about that, because I think it's important.
I understand that, but in the book, it's even mentioning that when the NASA people get together and they think, oh, who's stuck up there? It's Mark Watney. Oh, okay. So they specifically chose him also because of his psych test thing.
Yes.
He was the one. Also, the crew back on the rocket, no, on the shuttle thing, Hermes. They also
Hermes was the one that's taking the spaceships to Mars and back.
They took specifically Mark Watney in this crew because he had this optimistic humor kind of. I mean, his humor is really it's sometimes really black humor kind of stuff.
But, it's gallows humor.
Yes, but this is why he was chosen, because he is a very optimistic person by himself already, which is also something you need to be an astronaut. You need to be clever. You need to be flexible.
Yeah, flexible.
You need to be optimistic as hell.
Yeah.
And this is why he was chosen to be on that mission. And this is all of that. What you just said is totally correct, because he probably also trained his whole life to know all about the stuff. And
but it always feels like in some of these science fiction books, it sometimes feels a bit too convenient. It's like, oh, how convenient that they need the best pilot in the world to get this person help. Oh, look, and the best pilot in the world just happens to be there. But the point is, like, this is a mission to Mars. There's only six people. Like, they're going to have the best pilot there. Yeah. And what was his name? Rodriguez? No, Martinez. That's what I was getting the Martin from there. So I get the confusion. Yeah, so Martinez, who is one of the six astronauts who get sent to Mars, is one of those... Yeah, he's just the best pilot. Like, why would you send the second best pilot? You will, of course, send the best pilot. Yeah. And so, that's what you see with Apollo 13, where, you know, was it Jim Lovell and whoever these the other guys. When you see them do their stuff, you're like, well, holy shit, how did they get through then? It's like, oh, yeah, like, these guys had been, like, Navy and Air Force test pilots for 15 years first before signing up for NASA. Then they signed up for NASA. All of them had to have at least one degree or PhD or something in science and technology.
All of them have two main skills that they have to do. And it's just, of course, he is the optimum person.
Of everyone who could get stuck there, he is the best there. Like, I don't think any of the other crew would have been stranded there. No. But then, well, why would you tell that story about someone not surviving? Anyway, we've gone on quite a long time about all the problem solving, but I just want to say the technology... Let's talk about the technology, level of technology.
As much as I can tell.
No, the fun thing is that... it's weird to say this, but I don't think... It's never actually said how far in the future this book is set.
No.
It's just, you know, since the time of Apollo, blah, 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 and it's never said how far in the future. For me, it feels very much like an alternate 2013, 2012, 2013, because the technology on display is current technology.
Yeah.
Even though to get all these missions to Mars, like between the first and the second Mars mission is like 4 years, and this is the third mission, so it's like even after the first person's landed on Mars, this is 8 years later already.
Yeah.
And that's already, you know, if we were to start this mission now, it's going to take 20 years to build up there. So we're talking from now is also going to be 20 years in the future. It's going to be like 2040. However, the level of technology is not that. And I think it's very clever that when they needed something, it's like, oh, we'll just put something on a USB thumb drive. And you're like, wait, is this 2040 or is it 2012? And it's like, oh, well, what does my Wikipedia page say? It's like, really? Wikipedia is still going to be... You know what people are thinking about.
I mean, you don't know You don't know how much future.
What I'm saying is that all of the technology is today's technology. It feels like, okay, think about all of the stuff that we've learned today about the ion drives, about the, you know, even it's talking about the efficiency of solar panels. Solar panel efficiency is increasing all the time. Yeah. And he's giving numbers from 2012, not 2040.
Yeah, but this makes this book actually be scientifically
I'm saying it's
technologically logical because he did not invent any kind of technology, which in the end then doesn't make sense.
He's invented lots of gadgets. He's invented lots of technologies, but he hasn't invented any new science. Yeah. Like, he hasn't discovered any new science. And that, again, is what makes it great, is because we don't have to think, what will be possible in 2040? Because in 2040, we'll probably have, like, super... It'll be, like, laser drives or, you know, other... I don't know. There'll be different communications and I don't know what will be there. The good thing is we don't have to think, as readers trying to solve these same puzzles, we don't have to think what will be possible in 2040. We can just think what's possible now, and with what's possible now, what would be going down on Mars, you know? Yeah. And that's what I just wanted to bring up. It technologically, it's current, or it's not technologically more advanced than now, but chronologically, it doesn't work out. But I'm fine with that. I'm totally
the only thing that doesn't work now anymore is that NASA doesn't do manned space flight.
Well, that's
anymore.
Exactly what I'm saying. We are working in an alternate now because. Yeah, this is one thing that you're saying. They're like, oh, we need an emergency booster to get a food package to Mars. What can we do? And they're like, well, we've got this one here. And you're like, really? Ah, and China's got this one thing over here. Oh, okay, well, China. And has Russia got anything? Oh, Russia doesn't have anything. And there's not even a consideration. It's like, well, what's SpaceX doing? What's Boeing doing? You know, what? These are the private companies who certainly in 2040 would do that. Like, SpaceX doesn't even get a look in. And I think if anyone is going to be sending anyone to Mars, it's going to be... Elon Musk or some other crazy billionaire, they got these ideas like, oh, we'll have a reality TV show to send, you know, people on a one-way trip. Was it that Elon Musk says? He says, oh, to die on Mars would be really good. He says, but not upon landing.
Okay.
don't want to die on landing or on impact or whatever he said. Anyway, so that's another thing which is kind of like a little bit left behind. I mean, was it just yesterday or 2 days ago or something like that? We finished our movie and we switched across to see the SpaceX launch or the Tycom satellite. You know, it's becoming like popular entertainment to follow along with SpaceX. The next launch that they're going to do is a resupply mission to the ISS, and they're going to try and land the rocket again, like the first stage. They're going to try and bring a rocket back, and that's what we saw in Tintin on Mars. You know, where they bring the rocket down and it lands on its feet again, back down on the and they're like, that's from the 1950s, but now they're actually going to be trying it, and it's like, and it's super exciting and weird to be like, science, real science is actually catching up with science fiction from the 1950s, even though so much other stuff is there.
Well, we listen to that whole stuff as an audiobook, and somebody else on Goodreads mentioned that it's quite a read through all these. Scientific physics and chemist and all these, like, because he's really like, I think if you read the book, they're really like, you have the numbers and you have the calculations that he has to do, and because we get this as audio, it's not that heavy, but I think if you have to read through all that stuff, you pretty much probably could calculate it along.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it works because I really suck in science. I'm good in other things like languages and music and stuff. But science, you really can tell me anything. I will believe it. So it sounds really appropriate, and it makes sense
there
to
was,
me.
There were a few bits which were difficult to listen to when they were communicating by one half bit at a time to spell stuff out at a time. And instead of just reading the message, it was like, H-E-L-L-O.
M-R-A-K.
But it was like, it was, we were, so in the audiobook, someone was reading out text speak because they were trying to get it like as short as message as possible in text speak.
M-R-K-W-T-N-Y.
Yeah.
And that means then Mark Watney. But you have to make this all in
the
brain.
But the fun thing is because we were listening to that as an audiobook, we were then, we were then like having to translate it, and we were going, oh, that means because, or not enough oxygen, you know, like, yeah. You know, like not enough oxygen was like something like, yeah, it was really another puzzle good. For us.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's talk a bit about the audiobook as we're talking a bit there. We were listening to this, we were going to listen to this on the way there and on the way back, but we got distracted talking about how to, we got distracted talking about sports, first of all, wasn't it? We talked about the sports. NFL and how to fix basketball and
no, that was stuff. Later. No, we were talking about esports and...
Oh, yeah, that was it.
If esports are actually sports, and we were talking about what is sports and what is sports.
We were trying to define...
I don't think that's...
No, this shouldn't be in the podcast. But just to say, we were trying to define what makes sport a sport, which then doesn't make everything a sport, but then esports, which are computer game sports, how can you... We have a definition for esports and a different definition for sports which don't overlap. But also, we wanted to exclude shooting, like target shooting, from esports, and it became quite technical. So we spent a good like 2 hours talking about
that. Yeah, it was quite
and then we talked about politics. So it was only like the last 2 hours of our trip.
Well, I must admit, we came up with a pretty good definition for us.
Yeah, sports. I'm not even going to go into it now because of. But yeah, so there was like last 2 hours, and then we started listening to the book, and we only listened to the first 2 hours. Like, oh, we shouldn't have had a conversation. We should just listen to the book because we're enjoying it so much.
Yeah.
And then we took a trip away from where we were near Eindhoven up to
Utrecht,
which was, you know, a 40-minute journey. When other people were in the car with us, and on the way back, we listened to the book again. But they just started listening to the bit where someone is talking like what we were just saying before, spelling out text speak letter by letter, and they're like, wow, isn't this a bit boring? oh no, they were saying it's a bit boring for Mark Watney on Mars, but it was one of those weird things where it's like we're like entranced in this book. It's like, oh, but this is the first time ever communicated with
that actually puts the level of attention up so much, because you like I mean, I was driving, or Luke was driving, and then we were listening so closely to it to not miss anything.
Yeah.
So this whole thing makes you be more attached and more with your attention with a book than anything I listened before to an audiobook.
Yeah. So on the way home, we pretty much listened to the audiobook all the time that you weren't sleeping, because when I was driving, but this was back from the Netherlands, back to Berlin, so we listened to another bit. And then we before, when we were listening to a book together, what was it, The Prefect, we listened to most of that, but that was like, you know, 25 hours long or something.
Yeah, it was pretty long.
So we did several car journeys, but we realised we weren't going to take another car journey, and we only had like an hour and 40 minutes with this book. So this evening, we often get movies in the evening, as you can tell by our long list of... Was it 61 movies I watched last year or something like that? So there's quite a lot of movies. But this evening, yesterday, I said, hey, what we should do is just finish off this book. And I thought, I'll just listen to the audiobook on my phone and then give it to Julianne and she could finish it off. But then she was like, well, instead of getting a movie, let's just
sit on a couch
and listen to it. So while we were cooking some curry this evening, we listened to it, and then we sat on the couch and ate dinner. And then we just sat and listened to the book. And that was also weird, because I've never really just sat and done nothing and listened to an audiobook with someone else. It's always been while driving, which that's another weird thing. But otherwise, the audiobook
While saying that, I really enjoyed doing that.
What, sitting and listening to a
book? Yeah, because the last 1.5 hours were so exciting. I was like literally like so tense. I had my hand clumped into yours, and I felt like oh no, and then there was several countdowns and stuff, and it was so amazing. I was so into it. I had all the whole
story. It was like
you're
watching a movie.
Yeah, it was. I watched a movie in my head.
It was like you're watching Apollo 13 again, or Gravity again. Yeah. It was like Gravity.
Yeah,
and you actually
it's like
said
a mix. Yeah, it's just awesome. I really had so much fun.
Also at the same time, because this is what we're doing in the car as well, when something had happened, we'd pause it and go, oh, I reckon this is going to happen, this is going to happen, and then we'd play again, and then pause it and go, oh, but remember, they have this thing and that thing and that thing, and oh, we should do it like this, and you're like, oh, that's a bit like Gravity, and I was like, yeah, it's a bit like Apollo 13. You know, it's all those same kind of things that were going on there. And because when we started listening to it, you were like sitting up. I mean, we've got a big couch. We can both lay on this couch. Like, we spent a lot of money on just the biggest couch possible, pretty much. So I was just laying back and relaxing. You were sitting up there. I was like, what's wrong? You're like, you know, your back aching. You've been to the gym or something. You were just like, no, really tense. Although it was a really good audiobook for listening together, it was really good. However, I have two major issues with
the audiobook.
One, well, not major.
Which doesn't,
one
it doesn't I mean, it doesn't really mean anything about the story.
Let me just say one minor issue, which the translation of... No, let me put this way. I'll back up a bit. So, I mentioned this before on podcast. Stephen King says, what you should always do, any attribution should be he said, she said, Mark said, Vogel said, Vankert said. You know, just say something said, that person said, that person said. When you're reading that in a paper book or an ebook, your eye just treats that attribution, it just passes over it, it glosses over it. However, as an audiobook, having someone say this, he said, having someone said that, he said, that's the person that said, she said, this is what she, Juliana said, this is what Luke, and then blah, 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 Luke said, blah, 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 this person said. And if the differentiation between the voices isn't strong enough, you have to wait until the end of the line, then you get who just said that line.
Or,
and
at the beginning of the sentence, you always have, Martina says,
that's not a problem. But sometimes you get them flipped around, so it's all like, Virginia says, blah, 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 blah. Virginia says, blah, 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 blah. Bleep, bleep, bleep says, blah, blah, blah. A says, blah, blah, blah. B says, blah, blah, blah. And then you're like, oh, wait, was B saying the thing before B says? Or when the narrator said B says? So this is one of those things. I really do think that audiobook narrators or producers of audiobooks, when it gets to long sections where there's only one way of attribution, it's this person said, this person said, this person said, and it's always said, 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 it does get a bit repetitive, and you get into that quantum state where every line that you're listening to, you're not sure what the... You have to hold two different outcomes or three different outcomes depending on how many people are there in the room. And it's only at the end of the line do you get to see who said it. Whereas in a book, you would just, that would already, your eyes would have already picked up that information because it can, with your eyes, you can scan more information. You see that name, that attribution, even if it's like you're reading
and
a paragraph
of text.
And you
can skip whatever you want.
Yeah. The other thing, the other problem, again, that's not specific to this book, but a good narrator will use different voices for every single person in a scene. And in this book, especially in some of the times when they're on Earth and there's like four people having a conversation, sometimes it wasn't clear enough.
It wasn't clear, no.
The other issue that we have are the accents. At one point, Mark Watney, like say the first third of the book, or the first quarter of the book, say, Mark Watney is communicating only with us via the journal. So there's only one voice. And there, I thought, it was really good narration. Yeah. And then you get some stuff going back with NASA on Earth, and there's Vankert, who is obviously, he's Indian, he's like Hindu or something like that.
Yeah, but his accent is pretty good.
He's good.
All the way through, he sounds convenient.
And then there's other people who work for NASA, they've got an American accent, it's like, oh, this is no problem at all. And then there was this person who...
From
the BBC, this journalist, it's like, you from the BBC, it's like... Oh, hello, I'm from the BBC. And I was like, and I just turned to you and I was like, oh, that's the worst English accent ever. And we thought that the English accent was going to be the worst accent ever. Then we get someone from China who sounded so Japanese, it was amazing.
No, for me, that person sounded so Indian or Pakistani.
Yes, but it was like, I know I am. I can't even do, I'm trying to do a bad impression of someone doing a bad impression.
He did so similar, like, that... There was no way that this sounded like a Chinese person speaking English.
Yes, but I don't want to even do an impression of someone speaking Chinese because I'm really bad at it. But if you're a narrator, but this might not be like a top rate professional narrator. I don't know because this was self published. You know,
yeah,
I understand
maybe,
if you didn't get a top professional in. Then we go across to Vogel, who is the German. Vogel means bird in German, but that's his name.
His name is Vogel.
Yes,
it's like a.
Yes, but it's Vogel in the book.
You call it Vogel in English, but his name is actually Vogel.
Yes, but he doesn't pronounce it like that. Yeah, yeah. But is a name that people...
Yeah.
Have, yeah, so,
I
so
have
some
a
bird.
Friend who's called...
Vogel.
Surname is... Second name is Vogel.
And this, every time he spoke, both of us cringed all the time because it's just the worst German accent I've ever heard. It just kept ranging. Like, there was a few times where... What was it? I think one of them did an impression of him at one point, and that was a better German accent than actually him doing it. It was when
he had a German accent.
Yeah, I think someone did an impression of a German, and that was a better German accent than the German character doing it.
That's right.
Sounded like
also at some point we had his wife on communication with Vogel himself, and her accent was
slightly better.
Was okay.
Yeah.
It wasn't like it was not a German English accent. And I think to have an impression of a German speaking English is one of the easiest ways you can do.
Yeah. No, but for me, it sounded like Welsh Pakistani, and that's what I kept on coming back to. That it's like it sounds kind of like Indian subcontinent, but also Welsh at the same time. And this is not the first time I've come across Welsh like people trying to do a German accent
ending up in
Welsh Pakistani. But that's what it came out as.
Yeah. And even there were like I know I can't blame people to not do proper research on language, but if you are a narrator on something,
you have
two words to say in another language, like in German, and you can't even. I don't know what this sentence was. Help me. What was it?
Oh, like near the end.
Near the end when he said.
He says, "Oh, you really are a mad scientist," or something like that.
No. That was Vogel himself said like he was swearing, or he said two words in German.
Oh yeah, and they were both pronounced wrong. Yeah,
and they were both twice. He pronounced it wrong the second time, even worse.
He pronounced it different. Oh, was it maybe vielleicht or something like that?
No, he said something where it was a proper like at the end, and he pronounced it like.
Yeah, yeah. He was like super.
To me, that I know it's weird to say,
like
but
East Berlin.
It was normal German. He didn't manage to just even like you could even type it into Google, and Google would have read it. Yeah, tell you how to pronounce it.
Anyway, these are minor issues, and they're not even issues with the book. It was more like this every time it happened. We were both like, "Oh, come on!" Yeah. But it felt like, you know, when you're watching a movie and there'll be like. Like a special effect where you're just like, oh, you could have just spent a little bit more money on that special effect.
What was that movie where they had the...
Jurassic Park and the things come out the eggs. And
where they went into that factory and there was this... Oh, it was Elysium.
Yeah.
Which one was it?
I don't know what you're talking about.
They went into that... Oh, it was Cloud Atlas, that was it. In Cloud Atlas, there's this scene where they go into a... Obviously, it was meant to be a Mexican factory.
Oh, but they have
and
a...
they had the Japanese actress.
No, not Japanese. She was Korean.
The Korean actress acting as a Mexican factory worker. And first of all, she did not look Mexican at all.
It was the one time that the makeup really showed through in that movie.
Yeah, and her Spanish, I mean...
We talked about this in the last podcast. People know about this. We just told that story in the last podcast.
You're right. But these are the things that really... These like little things that stuck in your head.
Okay, anything else? Oh, let me just do this while we're talking about the audiobook. We're panning this audiobook. We both really enjoyed this. So if you want this audiobook for free, if you want to try out an Audible trial...
You can save quite a lot of money on that one.
You can do. Go to audibletrial.com/SFBRP and you can check out this book, The Martian, by Andy Weir, narrated by R.C. Bray. Maybe there'll be a new version, so that'll cost you one credit. I'm on a two-credit system, which... I think it's at like 19 euros or something like that.
I pay like 5 euros or something.
Really? Yeah. That's for one book a month.
Yeah.
Ah.
But enough. Sure? I already have like 4 stuck.
I think what happened. Yeah. Anyway, I got credits back to. Anyway, you sign up for a gold plan like Juliana has, or a platinum plan like I have. You get one or two books per month, and you choose the book, and you can listen to them whenever, and you can pass them around as well. I'm not sure if Audible wants me to say this, but if you have a, you can put more devices. You can sign up like more than one device onto a thing. So if you've got like an iPod and an iPhone, you can do this kind of stuff. Yeah, you've got a Flexi Abo special.
Well, 5 euros.
So what do I have? Can I click on that?
It was like a special one.
Yeah, mine's a platinum member monthly or something. Anyway, even if I wasn't getting a kickback from Audible for promoting their service. If you go to audibletrial.com/SFBRP, you do actually help out my Audible costs and stuff like that. But we're both members. We both really enjoy the service from Audible and think it's a really good deal. So that's it. Anything else you want to say about The Martian before we finish up here?
One thing I wanted to mention is that the...
We've already got an hour, so I
know,
it's
just a quick thing that I wanted to put in before, but there wasn't space for it. So I wanted to say that from the beginning, what makes this book so enjoyable is that it's not written like in normal novel English. It's not like you have proper sentences sometimes. Sometimes you just have a person writing a diary as if we would speak. So you have loads of you have loads of swear words.
Yeah, and it's very colloquial language. It's
very, very good. And this makes it also, when you hear that, I don't know how it would be when you read it, but when you hear that, it is so enjoyable.
When it's performed, like when it is, yeah.
Because you think you're so close to a normal human, to somebody who actually, like to somebody from our time going up to the Mars.
Yeah, it feels like it's written by somebody who exists as a geek in 2012 when it was written. You know, it was released last year, so it feels very modern. Yeah,
and that was what I enjoyed.
Yeah, right. It's very well written. The main character is very interesting. I don't think I could be. But again, it's one of those times that we're told he was picked for the mission because he was so much fun to spend time with. And we really enjoyed this book. So yes, we did have fun spending time with him and solving problems along with him. Like, it's just like, oh, he needs to separate this oxygen from this hydrogen and stuff like that. And we're like, oh, I bet it's this. And when the mistakes happened and he's like, I don't know what happened. And we're like, I bet I know what happened. I bet it was his oxygen that blew up the, kind of stuff. So it was really fun to rediscover science and relearn science and stuff along with him. Which is really good. So, I don't know what's out. Very well written, a lot of fun. It's, like I say, it's more of a puzzle than other things. It is a bit gravity.
Rating.
What?
Rating.
Points rating. Well, what are you going to give it?
I give it 5 stars.
Really?
Yeah.
5 stars?
Yeah.
Even though the German accent wasn't good.
Yeah, I don't want it to affect the book, because I'm rating the book. And and the book, for me... my enjoyment of the book was so high that I give it 5 stars. Yes.
But for me, it's one of those times where I would, like, again, the ratings of these book is, for me, purely subjective. Like, I want to rate how much I enjoyed reading a book or listening to it. So I don't mind having the listening of the book influencing, like, the audiobook influencing.
But even though we just pointed out the problems we had with the narration of the
But this is to say, there was a problem with the narration. The German accent was terrible. However, in the same way that you can enjoy the 1960 movie Robinson Crusoe on Mars as a comedy, like, you don't have to take it seriously. I never took that German accent seriously once, and I actually really enjoyed listening to how bad the German. And if you weren't with me, it would have just annoyed me, but that we listened to it together, and that we could work out these puzzles together, and that we could ridicule the German accent together and the British accent together, that's what made it so much fun. So I'm going to give it 5 stars as well, which is very... I mean, I really don't give books 5 stars very often. This is sort of sixth one in 6 years or something I've given 5 stars to. But I'm going to have to do it because, I know a lot of it is that I listen to it with my girlfriend... while driving along, and it was an interactive thing, and that we actually sat down on the couch and listened to the last 2 hours of the audiobook together. It was a very special book, and maybe the new version is better. Maybe they took out some of the swearing. I don't know what's changed about it. I don't even want to speculate. But it was really good fun
on Goodreads so far. Of people who I'm connected with on Goodreads, nobody so far apart from us. Actually read it and said something about it. Only people.
Oh, well, let me have a look on Goodreads.
I would be really interested in other people's opinion about it.
25 friends of mine, which are pretty much SFBRP listeners. David Monroe gave it 4 stars. Arnold Corso gave it 4 stars. Ryan, 4 stars. Eddie, 1 stars. And then we got lots of 5-star. They were the ones who gave longer reviews. Everyone else gave, like, one-line reviews. Alan, 5 stars. Natalie, 5 stars. Peter Corden, 4 stars. Joshua, 5 stars. Stian? I think Stian, 5 stars. Nick, 4 stars. You know, everyone is giving it 4 or 5 stars except Eddie. He says, I gave up at 20%. Seems I'm in a minority. I found it dull. I don't like the characters and the dialogue was unbelievable. They spoke like actors in those cheap films the Horror and Sci-Fi Channel show. Something very hot and explodey happened. This is from a NASA scientist. But this is what we liked about the language, is that it was somebody, it was from a character who is self-aware enough about his own situation and is a fan of cheap films and Horror and Sci-Fi Channel shows, that he would actually say something very hot and explodey happened.
Yeah,
because it's written as a personal journal.
Apart from being a scientist, he is also a human who is stranded on Mars. holy shit, I would just be scared. I would just, even if I would be the most intelligent ever person.
Yeah.
And sometimes then you just act like a human being and just say, oh, holy shit, something weird, bad, happened.
Yeah. So I'm going to do my quick top five Mars novels, not in much order. Let's say number five, there's a book, I can't believe I'm even going to say that. There was a book where a guy played a guitar in an alien chamber on Mars and didn't die at the end. Can't remember who wrote it. Can't remember much else about it. I think it was a short story collection of lots of stories set in the same, like, maybe Labyrinth of Mars? Oh, maybe I should have actually just typed that into Google. So that's a good book. Labyrinth of Mars? Labyrinth of Dreams? Labyrinth of Dreams? You type in Labyrinth of Dreams into Goodreads or into it's set on Mars. Also, let's say number four, let's say The Martian. No, let's say Total Recall, the movie. That's my fourth book because it's funny. The Martian, let's put that at number three. The Mars Trilogy. It's a book. It's not an album. Type in novel. Labyrinth of Dreams novel. Let's say Mars 2 is Kim Stanley Robinson's Red Mars, Green Mars, Blue Mars, because it's epic and I just don't think any other Mars book will come close to that. Except maybe Terminal World by Alistair Reynolds, which is not... I mean, I didn't give it 5 stars, but as a Mars science fiction book, Jack L. Chalker. Maybe not Labyrinth of Dreams. No, that's totally different book. Maybe there's another book called Labyrinth of Dreams. Maybe Labyrinth of Mars. I don't know. That's not. So Terminal World I really enjoyed because it's not only a science fiction book about Mars that never mentions the word Mars. It's also a science fiction book about other science fiction books on Mars. So yes, I will leave it there. Some top fives. You got a top five science fiction books on Mars?
I think The Martian. I think your next. The first one on Mars for
no,
me.
No, you must have read other than Mars science fiction.
If you say Dune could be Mars.
Dune isn't Mars. Yeah, Dune is. There was bits and pieces which are a bit Dune-like. I must admit. Yeah. What did you say was Dune-like about this, or was that a different movie we were watching? I can't remember. Don't worry about it. So that's it. Let's leave it there. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burridge on Twitter. You can become my friends on Goodreads, which is really good because then I can see what you think of books like this. You can become Juliana's friend on Goodreads. Where do they find you on Goodreads? I guess they can just search for Juliana Kunzendorf.
Or just look on your friends list. I'm there.
Yeah, but I've got loads of friends on my friends list.
Yeah, I'm the only Juliana on your friends list.
That is probably true. That is probably true. I have 565 friends, so look through to Jay on that list and you'll see what you can find. Otherwise, you can read my blog and you can keep up with my... on YouTube, I'm releasing juggling videos every day for some stupid project that I do every year. You can keep up with me there as well. Anyway, I think that must be it. The Martian, 5-star book from both of us.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, I really didn't expect that. But there's no way that I can... not give this 5 stars and yet give other books 5 stars. Next up, you will finish off
Use of Weapons
by Ian M. Banks, and I will probably do On a Steel Breeze by Alistair Reynolds coming up soon. So there's another few episodes coming up soon. And if you enjoy movie talk, maybe we'll talk more movies if we do any more science fiction
give
movies
us
in the
feedback.
Future. That's it from me. Say goodbye, Juliana.
Goodbye.
And we'll catch you next time.